This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, June 22nd, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ahead on the program, saving money at Walton Arts Center. An Energy Corps volunteer has given the venue a once-over to see how it can reduce energy costs. And a church in Fayetteville is offering respite for families caring for loved ones with Alzheimer's.
First on this edition of Ozarks, the touchy process of updating buildings on a college campus while remaining a good neighbor to locals nearby. This spring, the University of Arkansas's plan to create a route for trucks to carry equipment to renovation scheduled for the interior part of the campus received criticism from some residents.
The plan would establish a temporary road through part of the historic Old Main Lawn at the front of the university. In a few minutes, we'll meet one of the residents angered by the plan and find out how she mobilized like-minded individuals to oppose the plan.
But first, the jigsaw puzzle that is developing a plan for the renovations. As Ozarks at Large's Ithi Agnihotri-Madolka reports, several factors had to be considered when developing a plan to get trucks to the renovation sites.
The red areas are current or soon to start construction over the next really 3 to 6 months. Now, some of these will be wrapping up in that period, but the majority will be starting or well underway.
Dr. Mike Johnson, Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities at the University of Arkansas, points toward an aerial map of the university campus. The buildings currently under renovation are highlighted in red. Some that are about to undergo renovation over the next 2 years are also in red, among them Ozark and Bowen Walker Halls, two buildings that are a part of the University of Arkansas Campus Historic District bordering the lawn of Old Main. The renovation work is due to start this summer and be completed by summer of 2013. To access the two halls for renovation and construction work, construction crews will need a service road for heavy trucks and other traffic. According to Dr. Johnson, various options for the purpose were considered to zero in on one plan.
We looked essentially a 360-degree arc around the project sites. We looked at other projects that are also underway. Thinking about primary access points to the campus through the neighborhoods on that whole, all points of the compass. We looked at where construction sites were. We thought about where would be the primary truck routes.
Mike Johnson says the university also tried to determine best access points to the campus and areas with primary pedestrian and non-construction vehicular flow, trying to distribute traffic in the best possible manner.
The interior buildings are very challenging. When we did chemistry, very challenging. When we did Peabody, very challenging, even though it's a little closer to Maple Street. Maple Street is not a very good street to move east and west on. You can come in on Garland from the north, you can come in on Leverett from the north, but because of the number of pedestrian crosswalks, Maple is very challenging. Arkansas, from a pedestrian perspective, is probably least challenging of all, and then Dixon is kind of in the middle. So we looked at all of that. We looked at different ways where emergency vehicles come in. Could we have used that for construction traffic?
Dr. Johnson points out that hundreds of vehicles on a non-highway construction-type property over the course of 2 years can be very demanding.
Campus Drive, for instance, is not a highway. It used to be a city street years and years ago, but it's been made into a walkway, and it's not the same structure. Yes, you can say I can put steel plates on it. We'd probably deplete the steel plate inventory in this part of the state if we tried to put that many down, and it doesn't necessarily work well. So we looked at those things. We looked at trees. Again, safety, 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 but then you start looking at other things. View shed, the ability to see Old Main from Arkansas, impact on trees, impact on shrubs, impact on grass. All of those types of things. And grass, frankly, is the least of our worries. We can restore grass with sod and care. It's when you start getting into senior walks, 100-year-old trees, other things. And all that is below safety. Safety is always at the top.
The university proposed a temporary construction road to access the Ozark and Bowl Walker Halls that started at the intersection of Arkansas Avenue and Lafayette Street and extended across the Old Main Lawn through the area between Ozark Hall and Old Main. The plan was met with opposition by some local residents. Those opposed raised concerns about potential damage to the Old Main Lawn, while some worried about the nuisance caused by construction vehicles using Lafayette Street to access the temporary route. Some were also against the removal of the historic stone wall to create the road. The university was forced to reconsider.
We went back, and instead of looking at this area, we kind of looked at it in different perspectives. And we relooked access points after a lot of input and some suggestions that we look at Dixon Street again. So we've looked, and we think that there's an area we can come in here. We'll have to take down a little more wall so that we can have turning radiuses into it and out of it. But we think that the number of trees potentially impacted are about the same, maybe one or two to transplant, one or two to permanently remove. We're a little further away from larger trees, and we kind of wind our way a bit through here, and then we rejoin the original proposal route, and this all stays the same.
Whereas the original proposed route crossed three sidewalks on campus, the newly proposed Dixon Street route crosses close to eight. It would eliminate some access points for students trying to get to the buildings on the south side of the university core, such as Bell Engineering. Dr. Johnson says the two proposed routes are one of many steps the university is taking to minimize any adverse effects on the campus or its dwellers.
Fencing it in on both sides, that keeps cross pedestrian traffic. Putting gates on it, that keeps people from using it for other things, bicycles, motorcycles, whoever. Where you have the interaction points between construction traffic and pedestrian traffic, or construction traffic and vehicular traffic, looking at temporary stop signs, looking at flagmen, looking at gate systems where you prohibit flow to pedestrians when vehicles are crossing and you prohibit flow to vehicles when pedestrians are crossing. All of those things we looked at. We looked at protecting. We have a couple of tunnels that we cross for our utility system. So we'll shore those and protect those. We have senior walks, so we're going to protect those. We're also going to video it and try to put it up on a website so people can still look at their name while it's covered up for these 2 years. But we're trying to mitigate and minimize to the maximum extent possible in all aspects, but starting with safety.
The university has been summoned to Little Rock tomorrow to testify before a joint committee in a public hearing scheduled by Senator Sue Madison of Fayetteville and State Representative Johnny Roebuck of Arkadelphia, co-chairs of the Higher Education Subcommittee of the Arkansas Legislative Council. There are claims that the university did not comply with House Concurrent Resolution 1024 that requires all publicly owned historic structures do not undergo any structural changes without publicly announcing the extent and reason behind the proposed changes and the review of those alterations in conformation with the state and national preservation guidelines.
Somebody from senior leadership will go down as requested or summoned and talk about the concurrent resolution, I think it's called. It's predominantly written around buildings. It's not written around a lawn. Hopefully it's a positive type thing because this is a positive event. This is not a negative event, and it should not be turned into a negative event. We are restoring iconic facilities on our flagship campus in this state to provide a better education for future generations. It should not be turned into a negative event.
Dr. Mike Johnson says, even though two temporary construction routes have been proposed to access Ozark and Beau Walker Halls during their renovation process, it is likely not everyone will be pleased.
It's going to be better when we're done in 2 years than it is now. And that includes the lawn, the gate, the fence, I mean the stone wall. We need to do whole building renovations on Engineering Hall. agriculture, home ec, others. So it's all a process. We've tried to work with everybody. You'll never be perfect. Consensus means that you've reached agreement with many, not all. There are people that will never be satisfied unless it's 100% their viewpoint. We've done our best, I think, to work with that.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Iti Agnihotri Madholkar.
We will make a final decision, I would think, in the next few days.
As Iti mentioned, there is a meeting tomorrow afternoon in Little Rock of the Higher Education Subcommittee of the Arkansas Legislative Council. The plans offered for the renovation routes will be discussed. It's hard to imagine that conversation would even be taking place if not for Paula Marinoni.
I've probably been the consistent historic preservation, I call myself an advocate, in the last 15 years since I moved back here.
Paula Marinoni was front and center in an effort to keep Carnell Hall from being torn down on the University of Arkansas campus. Now it's an on-campus hotel, restaurant, and lounge. She had not as successful campaigns to prevent other campus buildings from being removed, including student housing designed by renowned architect and University of Arkansas graduate Edward Durrell Stone. She lives on Lafayette Street, right along the path trucks would take to get onto campus under the original renovation road plan. She says she first learned about that plan during a meeting that included university and city officials. And she says she told everybody at that meeting she didn't exactly like the idea.
I said, "This makes me sick."
Paula Marinoni doesn't mince words when she offers her opinion about that plan. She calls it heinous, awful. And that Thursday morning in May, she says she didn't hold back, warning that she'd work to scuttle the plan.
And I said, "This cannot happen. You cannot do this." And so then he's like, "Well, let's go walk it." And I'm like, "Okay, we're going to go walk it, but it's not going to make me feel any better." So we went to walk it.
And her opinion didn't shift. She didn't like the heavy traffic rolling in front of her house. She cringes when talking about the temporary removal of the stone wall in front of Old Main's lawn to allow for the access road to be built and used for 2 years.
If people have always been here, they may not realize Arkansas native stone is so prized and it is so expensive elsewhere. Anywhere else to have a building that's made out of Arkansas native stone is just amazing. But here, of course, we take it for granted because we can go out in the fields and pick it up. Well, that stone wall is so massive and so expansive that I think it is probably the best example of an Arkansas native stone retaining wall in Arkansas. That would be the queen of it.
She says despite assurances the wall would be rebuilt and the lawn cared for during the operation, she thought there was a better way to get equipment to the interior buildings that she agrees do need renovation. So she began to work almost immediately to build opposition to the plan. By Saturday morning at 8:30, she says she was sending out emails to organize a protest on Sunday. She wrote an email to the chancellor, David Gerhardt, whom she says she's known since they were in elementary school together.
I said, "If you do this, it will be something that you look back on and regret the rest of your life, and it will be the one thing that mars your otherwise flawless career."
There was a small protest that Sunday, about 72 hours after she first learned of the plan. But that wasn't going to be it. Paula says a background that includes being a head cheerleader at the university and a career that includes marketing has served her well when she's passionate about an issue.
So I can quickly assess, quickly rally, and keep people focused, get the objective, do the plan, and initiate and get it done, start to finish. And that's what happened with Carnell Hall, and that's what was going to happen with this. So, no, it wasn't dying at all. I've got a great resource of people.
A former member of the Fayetteville City Council and one-time candidate for mayor, she's lobbying for the city to become more involved. She's met with the Fayetteville mayor, Lionel Jordan, and she says there are several issues that transcend the campus, including what she says is potential damage to Arkansas Avenue, a tree-lined boulevard running in front of Old Main, the loss of residential parking on Lafayette Street, and the wear and tear on that street's bridge. And then she contacted her state senator, Sue Madison, who is the co-chair of the legislature's Higher Education Committee, and gave her a copy of House Concurrent Resolution 1024, passed by the legislature in 2003.
I wrote this House Concurrent Resolution back in 2003, and I brought this problem to the attention of State Representative Jan Judy at the time, who was a wonderful advocate of the people and of the state and of Northwest Arkansas. And because what I realized with the coming of the university wanting to tear down the girls' 4-H house, as I thought, wait a minute. And I realized 97% of the time in these issues that I would take up for preservation, I was going against the stewards of state-owned, city-owned, county-owned public property.
The resolution states no publicly owned historic structure or site can undergo any alteration that would compromise the historic integrity without a public announcement of intent, and that a review be conducted in accordance with state and national preservation guidelines. It's a resolution, and that means it has no real binding legal teeth.
It has no authority, but it does have the authority that a state senator who is co-chair of the Higher Education Committee can say, we're having this meeting and we're going to discuss this, and Sugg's office is going to be here and the chair of the Board of Trustees and the university, and you're going to come and you're going to answer to this.
So tomorrow afternoon, that meeting will take place in Little Rock. Since the public conversation began in May, a second option that takes the bulk of the heavy traffic down Dixon Street has been proposed by the university. It will still require, though, that part of the lawn of Old Main be disrupted.
The thing that I've told people is it's not good, but at least it's not hideously awful.
Paula Marinoni says she hopes after tomorrow's meeting and further consideration by the university that the school will adopt the second plan, the Dixon Street-based route. But she says she warned some university personnel she saw recently on the Old Main lawn that if the Lafayette Street plan remains, she'll keep fighting it.
I said, I think everybody that I have talked to, because I brought that alternative route up from the protest on, that we're going to have, you know, be reasonable that they may not have another way. And I said, this route is okay. And so go back and tell whoever that if they want to come in this way, they can probably start right away. But if they want to come in the other way, I said, you know, the meeting on the 23rd? And he goes, yeah. And I said, well, I got about four more things coming in behind that. So if you want to come in that way, it's going to be tied up for months before you're able to get started.
The meeting of the Higher Education Subcommittee is tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock in Little Rock. Paula Marinoni says she plans to be there, and she knows that there are people who agree with her and appreciate her efforts, and others who just as adamantly disagree with her and the way she approaches public debate.
I'm used to, when I do something like this, I'm used to people not coming forward. I will put myself out there, you know, whatever. I'm it. I'm the front person. And whoever wants to fall in on whatever particular issue, come on. But it is always going to turn out well. We may not always win, but it is going to turn out well because at least we stood up for an issue.
This is Ozarks at Large.
St. Paul's Episcopal Church is offering respite to families and friends caring for loved ones diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. The program will be the first of its kind in the state under new respite legislation passed by the Arkansas Legislature in 2009. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
Alzheimer's disease, one of 11 types of dementia disorders, impairs memory, thinking, and behavior. Research indicates it's caused by a buildup of plaque in spaces between nerve cells, as well as tangles or twisted protein fibers in cells. There's a biochemical treatment, but not yet a cure. If you've ever taken care of a loved one or friend stricken with Alzheimer's disease at home, you understand the complexities. But this month, St. Paul's Episcopal Church in downtown Fayetteville will open, under a new state law, Arkansas's first standalone church-operated respite center for Alzheimer's patients. Seated in the church's meditation garden, filled with pink roses, hydrangea, and crepe myrtle, is David Williams, a Rogers realtor and retired attorney. He helped initiate the program. He's originally from Mississippi.
I moved to Northwest Arkansas 4 years ago for my retirement. And at that time, my mother had already been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And for several years, I volunteered for the Alzheimer's Association of Northwest Arkansas, and I serve on its leadership council.
Williams is among a group of parishioners who have volunteered to staff the respite center. His mom, Emma Lou Williams, recently passed away.
And she was institutionalized for about 5 years and bedridden for 2 years. It'd been easily over 3 years just prior to her death that she'd even made an intelligent sentence. Watching that, that just gave me the interest in working with Alzheimer's. With this mission, I was able to apply my mind as well as my hands to get something going.
William says respite care helps everyone involved.
The respite care has its focus on the caregiver. While we are providing great service to the person suffering, our goal is to minister to that caregiver so the caregiver can drop off his loved one here at the respite care for 4 hours and go have a break.
And come back refreshed. Looking after Alzheimer's patients is exhausting, Williams said.
If you would think about how reluctant you might be to leave a 6-year-old at home to fend for himself, that's where we step in. We take care of that 6-year-old mind for the caregiver to get out.
Once a week, starting June 30th, caregivers can drop off patients at the parish hall where volunteers and staff will look after them for 4 hours for a $10 donation.
We will be providing a snack and a lunch and tons of activities right here at the church. This will be the drop-off point. And from 10 until 2, that is our program. So that the caregiver can go have lunch while we're taking care of things.
Pet therapists and musicians will be invited to help out, and the U of A Nursing College is planning to dispatch graduating nursing students to practice elder care. Catherine Lyon is a registered nurse and licensed social worker. She's also a parish nurse. She's serving as executive director of St. Paul's Respite Program. She says onset Alzheimer's disease has very specific symptoms.
Well, primarily it's short-term memory would be generally what loved ones might notice first. Forgetting simple things, where keys are, where home is, maybe recognizing people that have been all too familiar to them all their lives.
Catherine Lyon trained 24 volunteers, all parishioners, who will assist 12 enrolled patients who are screened as good respite candidates.
Primarily, whether or not they can be comfortable in the program. We're staffed with volunteers. We've all had very brief training on redirection and diversion, which is what we would attempt first if they became upset. If they are inconsolable, then we don't want them to be miserable. That serves no purpose. So we would contact their loved one to either come to the program and help calm them or, in all likelihood, remove them. Screening process initially We are looking to serve those individuals who are able to perform most of their own personal care. You know, they would need to be able to use the restroom with some direction, take their own medications with direction, with prompting, trying to be of service but not overwhelm our volunteers on the forefront with too much responsibility that's beyond their capability.
Lyons' volunteers have also been trained in validation, meaning not to correct patients, rather to agree and engage.
Yes, we kind of took it from the approach of don't sweat the small stuff. You know, it isn't important that they say the right thing or name the right thing or even be able to recognize where they are. It's just that whether or not they are comfortable, entertained, and hopefully given some sense of stimulation, if you will. I think some people call it play. I am a little leery of that descriptor for an adult, but it is play, and it's designed for them to enjoy 4 hours of our company.
Lowell Grisham, rector of St. Paul's Episcopal Church, is responsible for the program and financially supporting it.
This is a church that's very generous with its outreach. We've got a lot of programs like Community Meals that is a free meal to anyone who comes. We've also had parishioners who've left us bequests that are specifically for outreach. That helps us enter into a program like this with absolute confidence that we can fund it. But every time we ask this congregation, would you like to help us with X, they always come through.
Reverend Grisham says his church is the first to operate a center like this under a new state law.
Yes, this was Senate Bill or Act 357 that was passed by the General Assembly of Arkansas in 2009. And it's an act that exempts from licensure adult daycare centers caring for impaired adults for periods of 4 hours or less a day. So churches or any other daycare center can do this.
Reverend Grisham has had parishioners stricken with Alzheimer's, so understands firsthand the disease.
There are not many things that are more difficult. I'm doing a class on happiness right now on Sundays. One of the things that they found in research is that Americans are remarkably resilient, and things that you would think would just undo us don't necessarily undo us. We bounce back, spinal injuries and other things, for instance. But among those traumas and catastrophes that can happen to people, to care for a loved one at home as they go through a long, debilitating illness like Alzheimer's is among the most devastating things for one's quality of life or happiness that can possibly happen. So this is a chance to give people a little break during the week.
And the name of the respite program, Caring Friends, co-founder David Williams.
The name of the program is Caring Friends. And each person who is impaired with Alzheimer's, our vernacular, that person is our friend. The volunteers who are working here at the church, either to be one-on-one with our friends or working in the kitchen, they are our companions. I look to be a companion to one of our friends.
David Williams and Reverend Lowell Grisham says Caring Friends will develop best management practices and policies to share with other faith-based organizations to replicate. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
St. Paul's Episcopal Church Caring Friends Center will open June 30th. For more information, you can find a link on our page at ozarksatlarge.com. It's Wednesday, June 22nd, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Bacon-Martin, editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
So how about a little art to go with your music?
How about it?
All right. There's an exhibition of University of Arkansas ceramic students. Starting today, 1 to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday through June 29th at the Fine Arts Center Gallery on campus in Fayetteville. Mm-hmm. Don't think this is just your grandma's pottery. Always interesting. This afternoon, the summer movies at noon are happening at the Boone County Library in Harrison. Mm-hmm. So skedaddle over there for the rest of Jumanji.
With Robin Williams?
Yes. Kirsten Dunst?
And that's right, Kirsten Dunst is in that. Yeah,
I remember that movie.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting. I'd forgotten that was her.
Mm-hmm.
She's just a little
daughter.
Tyke in that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is she the same actress that was in an Interview with the Vampire?
Yeah.
I just watched that the other night.
Mm-hmm,
very,
that's her.
Very odd film. I'd forgotten. Anyway, Wednesday movies happening at noon every week through the summer at the Boone County Library in Harrison, and the Sugar Free All Stars are back this afternoon at 1 and 2 o'clock at the Fayetteville Public Library.
All right.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansas. Roy Buchanan was a guitar hero of the Guitar Heroes. He was born in Ozark, Arkansas, September 23, 1939, the son of a Pentecostal preacher. As a teen, Buchanan played with R&B star Johnny Otis and in the bands of Arkansas-ers Ronnie Hawkins and Dale Hawkins, heard here. The rockabilly stars, who were cousins, would often steal one another's bandmates, but Buchanan mostly played with Dale and recorded this 1960 song Lovin' Bug and several other sides with Dale Hawkins and other Hawkins sidemen, such as DJ Fontana and Willie Dixon. Arkansas-er Levon Helm played drums with Ronnie and the Hawks, which later became the band. Helm said the Hawks had to look like we were having a better time than anybody. Not Roy. He didn't believe in putting on a show. He just stood there and played the guitar. We loved how good Roy was, but he was too weird for the Hawk. In 1961, Robbie Robertson also came in on guitar, and Buchanan soon left the band. The Hawks eventually became known as simply the band. In the 1970s, Roy Buchanan's reputation grew among the tastemakers, but his albums didn't sell very well, and he never had a hit. In fact, the Franklin County native was the subject of a PBS documentary called The Best Unknown Guitarist in the World. Eric Clapton and Jeff Beck were both fans, and Buchanan was said to be among those considered to join the Rolling Stones in 1969, but Buchanan claimed he turned them down. Although Roy Buchanan released several albums on major labels, some with star support, he never found commercial success, and some of his album titles noted his problems with alcohol, like 1976's A Street Called Straight and 1977's Loading Zone. But Buchanan continued to tour and record. Things came full circle when he opened up for his old bandmates Levon Helm and the reformed band in 1987. The next year, on August 14th, in Fairfax, Virginia, an intoxicated Buchanan hung himself in jail following a domestic disturbance. He was the father of 7 and 48 years old. ¶¶ From Ozark in Franklin County, here's Roy Buchanan with Roy's Blues from 1973. Franklin County native Roy Buchanan of Ozark with Roy's Blues from 1973. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. For more information, visit arkansongs.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Energy Corps, an offshoot of AmeriCorps, puts people and places together for about a year at a time in an effort to promote community energy issues and needs. For the past several months, Dan Dean has been an Energy Corps representative at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. Recently, KUAF's Energy Corps representative, Christina Thomas, talked to Dan Dean about what he's been doing during his tenure at the arts venue.
That's the music of Dan Dean. He plays the drums, guitar, and other instruments with bands like Candy Lee and the Sweets or the Real Life Tigers. Music has always been a part of his life, but when he isn't playing tunes at places like the Greenhouse Grill, he is working to save another music venue money and energy. He is the Energy Corps member and sustainability coordinator at the Walton Arts Center.
Before I started as an Energy Corps member, they had already contracted with a energy service provider to do an energy audit of their facilities. And they came back with a proposal of several different strategies, upgrades that they could install to help save energy.
One of his focuses has been on lighting. As one can imagine, the Walton Arts Center houses a lot of lights, whether it be stage lighting or in a hallway.
We did a lighting demonstration in one area of Walton Arts Center's main building, Baumwalker Hall, just to make sure that everyone is comfortable with the brightness of the lighting, the color, temperature, before we go ahead and buy thousands of light bulbs to change over to, mostly changing over to LEDs, installing some more efficient fluorescent lighting as well.
Combined with some climate and ventilation changes, those lighting upgrades will save the Walton Art Center 35% on their utility bills.
Estimated that they will reduce the CO2 emissions of Walton Art Center by over 600 metric tons per year, and at the same time save an estimated $62,000 per year on utility bills. All of that put together, the payback on the project is really quick. It's under 4 years. So,
one of Dan's other main projects was assisting with the preparation and planning of this year's Artisphere event, specifically Trail Mix at Lake Fayetteville.
Arts and Nature Festival, and it's designed to celebrate artists who inspire us to live more sustainable lives through their art. And there were several events this year that I got to take part in, help with some of the planning, and got to attend. That's one of the great perks of being Energy Corps member at Walton Art Center, is I get free tickets to some of the awesome shows. But the Artisphere Festival, one of the most fun events for me was the Trail Mix event.
For the event, he organized a caravan to get a biker bar from the Walton Art Center to the trail. The biker bar is a set of bikes that volunteers pedal to power a band's equipment. Dan also coordinated an eco expo with various nonprofits in the area in order to educate the public on energy efficient efforts. Other endeavors also emerged from the Artisphere events.
Through the process of putting Artisphere together last year, established a sustainability team of staff members who are interested in helping Walton Art Center go green. And they started several initiatives as far as expanding their recycling program and making changes to their concessions to reduce waste and involve more local and organic and fair trade products.
Some of those local products come from Little Bread Company and Hog House. For some events, the center uses compostable and biodegradable tableware and are reducing packaging waste by purchasing more bulk items, which also reduces the number of shopping trips taken. Dan is a LEED certified architect and has found that his knowledge of building and lighting systems has helped him in his Energy Corps position, and he hopes to help with the center's expansion. He pursues energy saving efforts in his personal life as well. He has been carless since 2002.
It's been, it was a gradual process. We wanted to get rid of the car just because cars are a hassle. Now that I don't have one, I don't miss getting oil changes. I don't miss renewing the tags. I ride my bike somewhere. I can find a parking spot right away. And eventually, it was actually, we were running an errand in the car one day that we could have easily run on bicycles, but we were driving the car and got in a accident, and the car was totaled, and we thought, well, why get another one? We can do without it. So we've been living happily, car-free and carefree, we say.
He is a founding member of the Bicycle Coalition of the Ozarks, an advocacy group that works towards an infrastructure and education for cyclists and pedestrians.
And our big project this past year, Laura Kelly wrote a grant proposal to the Arkansas Highway Department and their Safe Routes to School program to get kids' bicycle education into the PE curriculum at all 9 Fayetteville public schools. So 3rd through 5th graders have had an opportunity to go through this 6-unit curriculum. And it's been really rewarding to see them not only have fun riding bicycles, but also learn how to incorporate that into their daily lives safely and help them help fitness and health be part of their daily experience. So,
Dan rides his bike to a plot of land in Winslow, where he is slowly but surely prepping for a farm.
The goal is to have a sustainable homestead up there, raising mostly berries because they're delicious and because we have more wild blackberries out there than we know what to do with. And we hope to plant a little orchard and a vineyard and build a little cabin and just live out there eventually.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
Christina Thomas is energy correspondent at Ozarks at Large, and support for her work is provided in part by Energy Corps.
Previously on Car Talk.
So I have to go home and tell him he's right?
No, don't do that. Because the guys with the white coats will be there in the morning to get you. Don't tell him he's right. He's already convinced you're a nut, and this may put him over the edge. Tell him you couldn't get through.
Don't miss the fun this week.
Join us for Car Talk.
Car Talk, Saturday mornings at 9 and Saturday afternoons at 3 on KUAF 91.3 FM. Time now for a chance to earn a couple of free tickets to the Little Feat concert at George's Majestic Lounge Saturday night. Music is scheduled to start at 9. You can learn more about Little Feat's performance at georgesmajesticlounge.com. Yesterday, Antoinette marked the arrival of summer in the Northern Hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
And in Iceland, there is an official public holiday for the first day of summer. It's called, in Icelandic, a language I do not know, which will become painfully
full
obvious.
Disclosure.
Yes. It is called Sumardagurinfirsti. According to the Icelandic Tourist Board's website, the day is observed with parades, sporting events, and general frivolity. People are off work, out of school. It's an official holiday that translates to the first day of summer. Trivia question today is, when does Iceland celebrate the first day of summer? Is it June 21st? Is it the third Thursday of every April? Or is it the 1st of July?
If you have a guess, you can give us a call at 800-522-5823. That's 800-522-KUAF.
All correct answers will be placed into the ceramic cow. One winner will be drawn.
And again, our question is, when does Iceland have an official public holiday for the first day of summer? Is it June 21st, the third Thursday in April, or July 1st?
Good luck.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 22nd of June, 2011. It's the birthday of the author of the famous anti-war novel All Quiet on the Western Front, Erich Maria Remarque, born in Osnabrück, Germany, 1898. He was a lieutenant in the German army in World War I. Many people took his novel as a memoir, but in fact it was fiction. Nonetheless, when Hitler took power in Germany in 1933, copies of All Quiet on the Western Front were publicly burned, and Erich Maria Remarque had to leave the country. He bought a villa in Switzerland, went to New York nightclubs, dated Hollywood stars. It's the birthday of the novelist Dan Brown, born Exeter, New Hampshire, 1964. His dad was a math teacher at Phillips Exeter Academy. The boy loved to work on math puzzles. He said, on Christmas morning when we were little kids, my dad would create treasure hunts through the house with different limericks or mathematical puzzles that led us to the next clue. And so for me at a young age, treasure hunts were always exciting. Many years later, Dan Brown was on a vacation in Tahiti with his wife. He picked up a thriller that had been left behind, The Doomsday Conspiracy, Sidney Sheldon. He said, up until this point, my reading had been primarily classics, Faulkner, Steinbeck, Dostoevsky, Shakespeare, and I'd read almost no commercial fiction at all. He was enthralled by The Doomsday Conspiracy, decided he would try his hand. He wrote a thriller about government code breakers. It was called Digital Fortress. It came out in 1998. Didn't sell very well. 2 years later, Angels and Demons, starring the Harvard symbologist Robert Langdon. And a year later, Deception Point, about a team of scientists in the Arctic. And then he sat in the laundry room of his house using an ironing board as a table, worked on his next book, in which he brought back the character of Robert Langdon, and wrote a thriller which involved Renaissance art, the Catholic Church, early Christian history. It was, of course, The Da Vinci Code, which came out in 2003, became one of the best-selling novels of all time. Dan Brown said, editing yourself is the most important part of being a novelist. For every page in The Da Vinci Code, I wrote 10 that ended up in the trash. Here's a poem for today that you learned in junior high school. poem by Christopher Marlowe. Come live with me and be my love, and we will all the pleasures prove that hills and valleys, dale and field, and all the craggy mountains yield. There will we sit upon the rocks and see the shepherds feed their flocks by shallow rivers to whose falls melodious birds sing madrigals. There will I make thee beds of roses and a thousand fragrant posies, a cap of flowers and a kirtle embroidered all with leaves of myrtle, a gown made of the finest wool which from our pretty lambs we pull, fair lined slippers for the cold with buckles of the purest gold, a belt of straw and ivy buds with coral clasps and amber studs. And if these pleasures may thee move, come live with me and be my love. Thy silver dishes for thy meat, as precious as the gods do eat, shall on an ivory table be prepared each day for thee and me. The shepherd swains shall dance and sing for thy delight each May morning. If these delights thy mind may move, then live with me and be my love. Wrote Christopher Marlowe, the passionate shepherd, to his love. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, where your mobile device can turn into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app. You can find it online at poetryfoundation.org. Edited by Noah Smith and written by Betsy Allister. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And before Garrison Keillor, we asked about the official holiday in Iceland held for the first day of summer, specifically when the holiday is held. And the answer?
The third Thursday of April.
And this is what I have learned. Mm-hmm. This is based on the Old Norse calendar that assigned just two seasons to each year, winter and summer.
I suppose they don't really get all four, right?
It's how you... I don't know.
I mean, I would imagine being more north than here, maybe you wouldn't really get four distinct seasons.
Maybe you get like an afternoon of spring.
Okay.
The idea with the Old Norse calendar was when the coldest time of the year was ending, mm-hmm. that was summer.
Oh, okay.
That was the beginning of summer, so usually in April. By the way, the Icelandic Tourist Board offers this disclaimer when describing the holiday. They say the weather for the celebration of the first day of summer is anything but summer-like. Okay, we're going to pick a winner for the two Little Feet concert tickets.
Yes.
That concert is George's Majestic Lounge Saturday night. And support for Ozarks at Large comes from Rogers Historical Museum and What's Cooking, two centuries of American foodways. The exhibit explores years of cooking through photographs, utensils, and appliances, and a hands-on activity featuring cooking gadgets of the past. Open June 25th through August 20th, 621-1154, or rogersarkansas.com/museum for more information.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, St. Paul.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Thanks for listening.